Our homily this morning is in not one, but three voices, and I'm going to invite Beth to begin our homily this morning.
In November of 1967, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. announced the Poor People's Campaign. There had been significant gains in civil rights with desegregation and voting rights, but without economic security, Dr. King felt that African Americans and other minorities would never achieve full citizenship. The idea of the campaign was to have thousands of poor people descend on Washington, D.C. and state capitals around the country to demand jobs, a fair minimum wage, unemployment insurance, and so on. Over 50 multiracial organizations joined the campaign. When Dr. King was killed in April of 1968, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference pressed on under the leadership of the Reverend Ralph Abernathy. The campaign began with a women's march on the nation's capital on Mother's Day, May 12, 1968, 50 years ago, led by Coretta Scott King. The next day, a small city of tents and shacks called Resurrection City was constructed on the Mall in D.C. And for a month and a half in rain and mud and summer heat, Resurrection City residents and other protesters visited federal agencies to demand economic justice. On June 24th, Resurrection City was forced to close by the Department of the Interior after their permit to use parkland had expired. The campaign succeeded in small ways, such as qualifying 200 counties for free surplus food distribution and getting several federal agencies to agree to hire poor people to help run programs for the poor. But overall, Reverend Abernathy felt that the results were disappointing. In Dr. King's speeches about the Poor People's Campaign, I was struck by the similarities between the 1960s and today. Here are some of his words. America is at a crossroads of history, and it is critically important for us as a nation and a society to choose a new path and move upon it with resolution and courage. It is impossible to underestimate the crisis we face in America, the stability of a civilization, the potential of free government, and the simple honor of men are at stake. In a sense, we are already at war with and among ourselves. Affluent Americans are locked into suburbs of physical comfort and mental insecurity. Poor Americans are locked inside ghettos of material privation and spiritual debilitation. And all of us can almost feel the presence of a kind of social insanity which could lead to national ruin. We have learned from hard and bitter experience in our movement that our government does not move to correct a problem involving race until it is confronted directly and dramatically. It required a Selma before the fundamental right to vote was written into the federal statutes. It took a Birmingham before the government moved to open doors of public accommodations to all human beings. What we now need is a new kind of Selma or Birmingham to dramatize our economic plight and compel the government to act.
In her article, To Pray Without Apology, the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNabb asks, what would have happened if Martin Luther King Jr. had cast his lot with the Unitarian Universalists? She quotes from an interview that she had with Coretta Scott King, who said, oh, I went to Unitarian churches for years, even before I met Martin, and Martin and I went to Unitarian churches when we were in Boston. We gave a lot of thought to becoming Unitarian at one time, but Martin and I realized we could never build a mass movement of black people if we were Unitarian. Reverend Bray McNatt writes, I realized that his race would have been the primary barrier. In a religious movement engaged until the 1970s in the active discouragement of people of color who wished to serve Unitarian Universalism, and become ministers. King might have found his personal struggles to serve Unitarian Universalism at least as daunting as the Montgomery bus boycott. She says, even if race had disappeared as an issue, King might have found the barrier of theology unsurmountable. I see a lot of nodding heads. In his essay, Pilgrimage to Nonviolence, King commented on liberal theology. There's one phase of liberalism that I hope to cherish always. It's devotion to the search for truth. It's refusal to abandon the best light of reason. But liberalism failed to see that reason by itself is little more than an instrument to justify man's defensive ways of thinking. Reason, he said, devoid of the purifying power of faith, can never free itself from distortions and rationalizations. End quote. According to Bray McNabb, when King writes that religious experience is not an intellectual formulation about God, but it is a lasting acquaintance with God, he is grappling with the connection between an experiential and relational God that is the bedrock of traditional African-American theology and the use of reason in religion demanded of humanity in a scientific age. She continues to write, for King to have answered the call to a liberal religious faith, a faith that clearly resonated with him since his earliest days of graduate studies, however, would have meant a fatal separation from the sources of his power. A faith in a suffering God who stood with suffering people, a covenantal love between himself and oppressed African Americans, the people who grounded his passion for justice. Bray McNabb herself was confronted after preaching in a Unitarian Universalist church, that Detroit church where Viola Liuzzo became a member. Someone came up to her after she preached and informed her that UUs had given up the notion of God and demanded to know why an African-American woman would possibly talk about God when that same reprehensible Christian concept had been used to justify slavery. Rosemary writes, I was dumbfounded by her vehemence, but not too shocked to remind her that it was the same tradition's God, most particularly a just and loving God, whose movement was forever towards justice and freedom and wholeness, that had inspired much of the anti-slavery movement and indeed most of the major reform movements of the 19th century that we as Unitarian Universalists are so eager to claim. Finally, she says, I informed her that I was just as much a Unitarian Universalist as she was, and I had not given up the notion of God. Unitarian Universalism, she writes, won my heart and my mind, because both God and freedom are precious to me. Beloveds, there are many people who have found help and hope and strength from a greater source than ourselves to endure what has often seemed unendurable. Do we risk their sharing with us how it is they have survived? What if they tell us, God brought me through? Do we dare make room for them to share and to celebrate, to witness to what they have seen and felt and intimately known? What if, she asks, what if our brother King had come into this congregation on a dark night after being bombarded with threats on his life and the life of his family? What if he had said, I am here taking a stand for what I believe is right, but now I am afraid. The people are looking to me for leadership, and if I stand before them without strength and courage, they too will falter. I am at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I've come to the point where I can't face it alone. Might we, my members of this congregation and other UU congregations, have prayed with him? Will there ever be a time when we can authentically be who we are, believe what we believe, speak our own truth, sing our own song, and be with one another?
Good morning. My name is Rennie Castle. We are now 55 years beyond the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. In that speech, referring to the progress made since the end of slavery, King said, 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. Much of what Dr. King fought against, structural white supremacy, segregation, voter suppression, and the wealth gap, are still with us today. Our society has made significant progress in these areas, but recently, in the ebb and flow of progress, people of color have been losing some of the gains made during the civil rights era. Voter suppression is increasing, schools are more underfunded than ever, and minority incarceration has skyrocketed due to the ongoing war on drugs and a for-profit criminal justice system. Today, 155 years beyond slavery, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society. 55 years have passed since that famous speech, and the dream is still more dream than reality. Injustice perpetuated over time becomes normalized. It feels like the way things always have been and always will be. People start believing that racism, poverty, and war are unavoidable. There appears to be no alternative to our exploitive and destructive economy rather than seeing that there is no alternative other than to change it. People of faith are called to oppose injustice and work to create a better world. When they call us utopian dreamers, we will know that they have heard us and that we are on the right path. We live in unsettled times of extremist fear and hate. Unsettled times are also times of opportunity. The blatantly racist and immoral leadership of our country is bringing people together in common cause. Last Monday, in an interview on Democracy Now! From his home state of North Carolina, the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II said, "Extremism is at work in other states and has gained power in all three branches of our federal government. Much as it did here 4 years ago, we know that the way to change the nation is to nationalize state movements. We have to do it with a states up model." Moral movements such as the Third Reconstruction and the New Poor People's Campaign are spreading across America. Inspired by leaders such as the Reverend Barber, they are focused on justice and public policy regardless of who is in power. These are inclusive, intersectional, grassroots political movements that amplify the voices of everyday people and build common ground across race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, class, and political party. This spring, the New Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, will engage in highly publicized civil disobedience and direct action. Over a six-week period in at least 25 states and the District of Columbia. The campaign seeks to force a serious national examination of the enmeshed evils of systemic racism, poverty, militarism, environmental devastation during a key election year, while strengthening and connecting informed and committed grassroots leadership in every state, increasing their power to continue this fight long after June 2018. It will push forward concrete demands, build unity across lines of division, and draw on art, music, and religious traditions to challenge the dominant narrative that blames poor people for poverty. A year before his assassination, Dr. King said, "After Selma and the Voting Rights Bill, we moved into a new era, which must be an era of revolution. In short, we have moved into an era where we are called upon to raise certain basic questions about the whole society. The time has come for a new poor people's campaign to help us become the nation we have yet to be." This campaign is about more than commemorating Dr. King's work. It is about completing it. Please consider joining the campaign this spring for nonviolent civil disobedience training, followed by direct actions later in Sacramento.